prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we discuss underseen horror movies, specifically those with fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Lance.
And I'm Erica.
And we're still in April, which
showers
means...
of blood.
Yes, April Showers of Blood is still running, and this is the month where we, Eric and I, pick a film that includes blood in the title. Also, if you haven't listened to it yet, Erica's last episode, her pick was Bloody Sect. Give it a listen if you haven't. It's fucking awesome. Okay. Also, we really appreciate ratings and reviews too. So if you have the time, shoot us a rating on wherever you can on any podcast.
Well, the comments on Letterboxd too, because I saw Adam's review of Night Game.
Yes.
He's in love with the Houston stuff like you are. So,
well, he's a Cincinnati Reds fan. He pointed that out. We had a kind of discussion
in
the comment section, but he did enjoy Night Game for the most part.
Okay. The movie's made for baseball people. I mean, that's really it.
Yeah. Baseball season's going strong.
Good for you.
But this is not a baseball movie that we're covering.
No.
This is it's a bloody, bloody pick. Not really, but it's a film by the great Ted V. Michaels, Blood Orgy of the She-Devils from 1973.
This is Mara, evil incarnate, high priestess to Satan, queen of the black witches. Blood Orgy of the She-Devils.
No! Now, who's to deny whether the devil possessed their souls or not?
Blood Orgy of the She-Devils. The film that dares to probe the black depths of hell.
And like I mentioned when I announced this pick, I love this title. But spoiler, if you're hoping for an orgy... or blood, for that matter, you'll be mildly disappointed.
Yeah.
Not even mildly. You'd be disappointed overall.
Even if you go in and are like, okay, well, it's not going to be like a literal orgy, but it just could be like an excess of blood. There's not that either.
Yeah, I mean, the ending kind of can be considered a blood orgy, which we'll get into. I'll discuss my reasons, right?
Sure.
There are she-devils in here.
That is accurate.
But, I mean, they're not really, like, I don't know. They're not too evil. It's just in their past lives.
So yeah.
I don't know. Okay, so Blood Orgy of the She-Devils. To quickly summarize, it's a group of women who come together under the guidance and the power of Mara, the queen of the Black Witches. And she uses her occult powers and spells to allow these maiden disciples to experience their past lives through visions in a mirror or even a crystal ball. And in every case, these women were either tortured, stoned to death, burned at the stake, basically assaulted by men who felt that these women were just powerful witches. So Mara and these she-devils seek revenge on these men for their past lives' actions and of persecuting women as witches, and they sacrifice them. And there's really no way to spoil this 73-minute movie.
Mm-hmm.
As nothing really happens, it's kind of like this visual and sonic experience. I don't know. It's definitely not something that you necessarily watch for the plot, but we will dive into the ending and discuss what maybe people might consider a spoiler. I don't know. Just like every movie we do. But Blood Orgy is currently sitting at 561 views on Letterboxd. It's streaming currently as a recording on Tubi, as are most of Ted V. Michaels' films.
Almost all of them are on there.
Yeah, do the deep dive. If they're not on Tubi, they're on YouTube. They're everywhere.
None of them are hard to find.
Yeah. It does have an Image Entertainment DVD release if you want to pick that up. I did pick it up mainly because there was a Ted V. Michaels audio commentary, which I would say that I would not personally recommend listening to.
You know, director's commentaries can be hit or miss because there's it's being too close to it kind of thing. And you're not really getting the type of information that you would get from, like, say, a film scholar from the outside.
Right. Who's done, like, their research on the making and the director. So it's a different perspective.
Yeah.
I usually love the director's commentaries.
I like the Carpenter ones, especially when it's him and Russell. Those are the fucking best. But
Escape from New York is
the
best.
It's so good. Overall, like every now and then when there's a director's commentary, I'm like,
Well, I mean, Ted V. Michaels, when I listen to him, when he's being interviewed, I love listening to because he's so excited all the time. Yeah. There's a moderator who's asking him questions, setting him up to, you know, he's asking all the right questions and he's in a really happy mood. But the audio commentary for Blood Orgy of the She-Devils is basically him talking about every room in the castle, what it was used for when he lived there. He was very impressed with his script. So he kept saying, man, I can't believe I wrote this, you know, and he would literally sit there. He talked a lot about props that came from his personal collection. But the biggest, like most upsetting part about it is he would just stop and watch the movie for like 3 minutes at a time with no saying nothing. And then he'll be like, oh, wow, like react like he's seeing it for the first time. It's endearing.
That is cute.
There are a few fun stories, but you're basically just watching a movie with someone who knows a little about the castle. It's cheap. I mean, you can find it for under $10 if you wanted to pick up the DVD. I recommend it.
God, stop it. You just said you wouldn't before you went into that tangent. My God.
I recommend owning every episode or every film we cover on the podcast. That's kind of my goal. That's why I like to buy things. Also, leave us a rate. Enough begging here. Okay. So Erica and I, we both watched a lot of Ted V. Michaels movies.
You probably watched a lot more than I did.
I watched way too many.
So here's my problem is I unfortunately put off my starting, minus the documentary about him. That's also on Tubi. I started my watches this week, like before recording. And if I had started 2 weeks ago, I could have separated them out a little bit more because even though he does cover a lot of different genres, you know, he's got like the Doll Squad and like Corpse Grinders and Astrozone, you know, sci-fi, action, horror, like, you know, he's all over the place.
He is.
It's his stamp is so firmly pressed on all of these that it's very hard to watch a lot. Like a Ted V. Michaels marathon is damn near impossible. And I have a high tolerance for putting up with some shit.
It's true. It is true. I feel like I may have picked, I mean, I feel like maybe both of us picked probably his strongest movies.
Yeah.
Because when you get into the 90s and beyond,
I didn't even bother with anything past that. And like, so I'd previously seen Corpse Grinders and that remains my absolute favorite. I mean, the premise alone, like we're grinding up human meat and feeding it to cats.
Yes.
Take the meat, take the cat food away. Cats get angry and go on a rampage. Of course. I love that fucking movie.
It's a great movie.
I mean, the first time I watched Astro Zombies was when I was in high school because I was then and still am now a big fan of the Misfits. And so I was like, oh, I want to watch all these movies that these songs are based on. And because Astro Zombie is like the, you know, the Walk Among Us album is just in my opinion, like one of my top five all time favorite albums of all time. That song is the best song on that album.
Nice.
It's hard for me to even like look at the poster and the song not be in my head.
Right. I love the Astro Zombies. That one is one of
my, I saw your rating on that.
I love, I mean, the cast, Tora Satana. I mean,
she's great.
She's in a lot of Michael's films too. Actually two more. He did four Astro Zombie movies and she's in three of the four, I believe.
Yeah.
I did watch the sequel to the Astro Zombies, Mark of the Astro Zombies.
I wouldn't go there.
Which was my first movie, Ted V. Michaels movie from the 2000s. And it was exactly kind of what I was expecting. I mean, you know, the CGI is just, it's just all over the place and exactly what you would expect from a movie like that. And from an independent filmmaker who, you know, probably found somebody like on Fiverr to do all the special effects or some sort of website. Like, hey, I'll give you $15 if you can throw in this explosion.
Right.
One thing I noticed in his movies from the 2000s is a lot like Alvaro Passeri, who uses this stock sound effect of a woman and a man yelling when they're being killed. Whenever they're killed, it's the exact same yell. It's like an just exaggerated. It sounds like somebody's hitting a keyboard, you know, key, and just every single yell in Murder is exactly the same.
Yeah.
Which I guess is something with independent filmmaking from the 2000s.
I mean, yeah, they're all pulling from the same source for that stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we'll dive into his filmography, I think, a bit. Or maybe we won't. I don't know. It's a lot to talk about. There are a lot of regulars. Like in a lot of independent movies, the directors use a lot of the same actors in their movies. And Blood Orgy has a few of the Michael's regulars, specifically the women in all his movies. The main reason being is in 1972, Michael's purchased this huge, what he calls a castle. Mm-hmm. It's this 8,000 square foot, 26 room, 100-year-old castle in Glendale, California. And it stood on a few acres of land. And that's where he filmed Blood Orgy of the She-Devils and so many of his other films. Michael's was referred to as a polygamist because he would have 5 to 7 women living there with him, which he'd call the castle ladies. And he claims to have had like over 60 women that lived with him in the 14 years that he lived at the castle. He claims, though, that there was nothing funny going on.
Yeah, he said that in the documentary. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's, I mean, he was a stocky little guy. He was handsome. He was very eccentric. It's all about the mustache. Every picture I've seen, he's had it his whole life, looks like.
I mean, you know me, I love the mustaches.
So. The mustache, and his is great. He has the whole curly Q, which he waxes
out. It's adorable, yeah.
It's great.
But, yeah, I mean, he says, like, nothing went on. I'll take him at his word for that. It just, you know, I can see how someone from the outside looking in would be like, really, nothing went on there? And not be a little bit questionable.
Right. He claims that, you know, it was a sincere, honest way of living. And the whole goal was to make movies and help friends and family. Mm-hmm. Or not family, but just friends and these women help out with all his movies. They would help out with makeup departments. I mean, obviously, they would act in all his movies, art direction, creating the costumes. They really did just make a ton of movies together.
Yeah.
What else went on behind the scenes? That's for Michaels and the women.
There you go.
But yeah, so Blood Orgy was filmed in this castle. So there's a lot of the same women. A lot of the She-Devils in this movie were women that lived at the castle at the time. Okay, first we have Lila Zaborin, who did not live at the castle with Michaels, by the way. And she's, you know, as far as I know, she didn't live in there. But she's this very captivating actress who plays the head witch, Mara. The sad thing is that this is her only acting role. She is interviewed in the 2008 documentary, The Wild World of Ted V. Michaels, which I'm sure we'll be talking more and more about.
Yeah.
There is a funny story from that doc, though, from Lila Zaborin, who says that she took her 8-year-old daughter to see Blood Orgy of the She-Devils at the theater. And after the film, her daughter wouldn't speak to her and wouldn't even go home in the same car with her. She had to call her friend to come pick her up and take her home. And then for weeks, her daughter pretty much thought she was a witch. Leslie McRae plays Lorraine. She starred in Michaels's Girl in Gold Boots from 1968, which is about a go-go dancer trying to become a big star. I didn't watch that one.
Me neither.
She was in a dozen other films, having small roles in Jack Hill's Coffee and Paul Bartel's Death Race 2000.
Nice.
She was a beautiful woman. She won apparently a lot of beauty pageants before acting. Tom Pace plays Mark, who's the guy that doesn't believe in all the witchcraft mumbo jumbo. He's Lorraine's boyfriend, I guess. Tom Pace, he acted in Michaels' Astro Zombies as well in Girl in Gold Boots. Again, a lot of these people are just in most of his movies. Another regular is William Bagdad, or Bill Bagdad. He plays Taruk. That's Mara's right-hand man, kind of his servant, or her servant. Bill Bagdad was in Astro Zombies, Girl in Gold Boots, and the Doll Squad. He also played a slave in Cecil B. DeMille's Ten Commandments. There's actually a scene in Blood Orgy where the scene where Paul and Lorraine are having like a picnic, and he's telling her about like how stupid he thinks witchcraft is, and she's kind of a believer. That was filmed on the DeMille estate on the front lawn. Apparently, Michaels got along with the estate and filmed numerous times on the property for multiple films. But yeah, Bill Baghdad, he also did a lot of roles in television, which makes sense because he's got this great villain look. He has a good stink eye. And then Victor Isay plays Dr. Helsford. Again, he's another regular. He's an Astro Zombies, Girl in Gold Boots, One Shocking Moment, all Ted V. Michaels movies. He played a doctor in one of my April Showers of Blood picks from last year, Blood Song.
Oh, okay.
With Donna Wilkes and Frankie Avalon. It all comes
it's
back.
All connected.
Yeah, it is. Victor Isay was also in Young Guns and Wild Hogs.
I know you love Young Guns, or at least the soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. I love everything about Young Guns. You know, it's just a great... It's a great...
Wait, what's Wild Hogs?
With Tim Allen, John Travolta, Martin Lawrence, William... Yeah, I've never seen it, but he plays... I think he played a doctor from what I could tell in like everything.
Mm.
And that's pretty much kind of like the main characters. The characters in this movie are kind of hard to keep track of because all the women look alike. You can't tell what's... There's a lot of flashback scenes that might be the same actress. It's just... It's wild.
Yeah.
So the crew for Blood Orgy of the She-Devils. You ready for it?
Ted V. Michaels.
I mean, not really. He is usually the director, writer, editor, cinematographer for most of his films. Acting, he does play a witch hunter in Blood Orgy. He usually has small cameos in all his movies, but he does have help from other people in Blood Orgy. Peter James co-produced Blood Orgy with Michaels. He co-produced The Corpse Grinders and a few of Bob Clark's films, like Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things and Death Dream.
Hell yeah.
Good stuff. Cinematography is handled by Anthony Salinas, who also filmed The Doll Squad, which was actually filmed the same year as Blood Orgy in the Castle. Carl Zitcher provides the original score, and he's best known for doing most of Bob Clark's. There's kind of a tie-in with Bob Clark and Ted V. Michaels, like with cast and crew. But he did the score for Black Christmas, A Christmas Story, Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things, Death Dream, and Porky's. Zitcher also did the original score for the original Prom Night, 1980. So Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things is Zitcher's first film that he scored. And shortly after, he did Blood Orgy of the She-Devils, which Michaels had never had a original score that was completely synthesizer, that was all synthesizer. It was something new to him.
Yeah.
So he pulled in Zitcher, and he did, I think... A fucking bang up job.
I have that note. I wrote sci-fi synth. Lance loves this.
Yeah, 100%. Like there's a lot of the just, you know, what you expect from like old sci-fi movies that are just pulled into this. When I first listened to it, my review was Zitcher's electronic score sounds like a cat getting pissed off, ready to kick some ass. Cause it sounds like a cat, like just an upset. it's good stuff. But yeah, a lot of the same cast and crew are in these Michaels films. And I think it's worth talking about Sherry Vernon, she's the makeup artist for Blood Orgy. She was also she lived in the Michaels castle for a couple of years, was in a lot of his movies. She's the lead in 10 Violent Women, which I watched.
How was that? I was going to get to that, but I hit my limit for the week.
I loved 10 Violent Women. I mean, I liked a lot of Michaels.
Oh my God.
I mean, my usage of the word love, obviously, at this point has no meaning.
No, it fucking does. Can you like put it in terms from like, tell me what I would like about it?
Well, there's not 10 Violent Women in it, by the way, but I like the way it's set up. So it's about these women who are gold miners. They start off in gold mining. They're dynamiting like, you know, caves for gold and stuff.
Okay.
Very interesting. They hate their job. So they decide that they're going to go ahead and heist like this high-end jewelry shop. So they steal all the diamonds and the jewels and from this jewelry shop. They try and sell it to this drug dealer who's played by Ted V. Michaels.
Okay.
And Ted V. Michaels is like, I'm not going to give you money, but here's cocaine. I'll give you $1.5 million worth of cocaine. And they're like, screw you. We want money. So they end up killing him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hide the jewels. This is a good movie. They hide the jewels and then they go to a bar and there's just one actress who's kind of the leader of the game. She's amazing in it. And I saw it was her only her credit, kind of like Lila Zaborin. She was stealing the show, but she gets real drunk at a bar and tries to sell the drugs that she has to undercover cops. And then she, spoiler alert, she's killed by the cops because she starts going nuts. And all the rest of the girls are arrested, and it becomes a women in prison movie where there's this warden, again, played by an actress who only had one role. I think her name was Georgia Mason. Mm-hmm. And she's amazing in it. And she basically sexually assaults all the inmates. She's terrible woman, crude, and she's one of the best parts of the film. And so it becomes like an escape from prison. So it's all over the place. There's so many different plots. Okay. And I was just kind of...
I mean, it sounds like it has way more of a plot than Blood Orgy, but well, that Blood Orgy doesn't have a plot.
Oh, it definitely does. Like, I mean, there's a structure to it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, you know, how women in prison movies are usually like, maybe they'll show the crime, but usually it starts off just in women in prison.
Right.
And that's the whole movie.
Yeah.
This is like 45 minutes of these women kind of becoming these criminals, making the decision, committing the act, getting caught. And then like the next half is them escaping and, mm-hmm. you know, how they can live with their newfound freedom.
Okay. Is it sleazy? Like once it gets to the women in prison part?
It is sleazy. There's nudity. There's like some...
Okay.
But, you know, like the shower scenes, they all have, I'm not going to sound like a fucking pervert here, but they're all in their panties, you know,
I hate it when they do that.
I mean, I guess some of the actresses weren't comfortable. I don't know. Maybe Ted V. Michaels wasn't.
Then don't have a fucking shower scene. I'm sorry. Right. Like if you're not going to fucking get naked, then don't have a fucking shower scene. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like they would be naked walking in, but the setup is they kind of walk in, they're going to start their shower, and that's when the fights start.
You can have a locker room scene because, yeah, I can understand like, okay, well, we're getting undressed or redressed, you know, after our shower.
Yeah.
The actual shower scene, if you're not fucking naked, don't have it in your movie.
Yeah, I find that most, I think I'm so, I don't know, in love with some of Michaels' movie because of the performances.
Okay.
So that's why I would recommend 10 Violent Women.
All right.
The plot is interesting. So the thing that's funny is, you know, Ted V. Michaels, he basically did the rest of Blood Orgy, directing, editing, producing, and writing. And he claims to have spent about 2 years gathering notes based on his personal experiences with witchcraft and attending a lot of seances in California. Yeah, invocations of deceased souls that he would go and participate in.
2 years?
It was a subject that just fascinated him from what I understood.
Uh-huh.
And he would, you know, I guess a lot of people have journals and stuff and would just take notes of stuff. And that's what he did he had years of notes that were specific to witchcraft and the occult. And he decided like, oh, I want to make a movie that involves this subject matter. So he wrote the screenplay in about a week, apparently with all these notes. And he said, this is the only film that he stuck word for word to the screenplay and didn't change anything up on a whim. Like, I guess every other of his movies, they kind of just drive along. He'll change scenes up, write mm-hmm. it as he goes along, which it feels like. But, you know, during the audio commentary, again, he kept saying, wow, some of this stuff I wrote, it's great. I'm glad I stuck with this screenplay, you know? Yeah. He was very focused, apparently, when he wrote this screenplay and very pleased with it. Which I think it's a hilarious screenplay because it's just mumbo jumbo of like probably every book he ever read.
Yeah.
Pulling from religious themes and myths and astrology and all sorts of cultures. I mean, it's all over the place.
It is. I 100% appreciate the work that he has done here.
You have to.
You can't not, especially after watching the documentary. Which, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure if we mentioned it yet, but it was narrated by John Waters.
Yes.
And I'm like, if you get John Waters to narrate a documentary about you, you have to be doing something right, you know?
Right.
And, you know, I mentioned, I was like, I only started watching this week. I could only watch like three. And that is.
I watched like 9 or so.
Good
10.
God.
I even watched some movies that he was just cinematographer for. And
I mean. Yeah, I absolutely appreciate what he's doing. But his movies are just ones where you need time in between them. And 100%. This one in particular is very much an experience. Corpse Grinders is a lot of fun. 10 violent women sounds like it's fun. You know, Astro Zombies, I know you love it, but it's my opinion since I was in high school and that one didn't change. I appreciated it a lot more. Like I had a lot, it was, you know, I was like, oh, I can appreciate the fun and camp of this versus right. like snobby 17-year-old Erica, like just dumb, you know? Yeah. So
I'm going to put 2001 back on it. This is a real movie.
So yeah, I 100% appreciate the work that he's done. I know one thing that was interesting to me in that documentary was when he got offended about his movies being called trash. And, you know, when we did our episode with Bleeding Skull, and, you know, their book is called, you know, Trash Horror Odyssey. Like right. they use the term affectionately.
Right.
And that's, I mean, yeah, Ted V. Michael's movies to me are trash, but in that Bleeding Skull endearing way.
Exactly. Yeah, no, he did point that out because he said first it's his films were called Grindhouse, like mm-hmm. they're being filmed or shown as Grindhouse. Right. And he felt like, well, that seems insulting. And then he found out what that word meant. He's like, okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was very focused on the word trash. He said he was offended because he puts his blood, sweat, life, money, just everything. His whole life was movies and he felt like it was an insult.
Yeah.
Which, like you said, Bleeding Skull, us, a lot of people that like movies like this, just, it's a great term to just, I don't know, talk about movies you love. Like it's,
yeah,
it is endearing. It's an endearing term.
Yeah. I understand where he's coming from. Like absolutely. The word trash has a negative connotation, but within the circle of people who appreciate these movies, there's an understanding that your trash horror movie is a lot of fun. Like it's, you know,
yeah.
So that was kind of, I was like, oh, I feel kind of bad now, but at the
I did
time,
too.
I'm like,
yeah. You know, when like, when I think of trash horror, I think like it's kind of a party. It's best watched with a bunch of people, yeah. Which is a positive thing.
It's DIY. It's people putting exactly what he said. He's putting his blood, sweat, tears, money, everything into it to make the thing. And the people who are calling these trash that aren't familiar with films like this, then yeah, those are the people who are being derogatory about it, but not right. people like us, like Bleeding Skull, like people who like these types of, you know, low budget, sincere movies.
Right. And because the documentary, I think, was 2008.
Yeah.
So there's a period, obviously, like in the 60s, 70s, even 80s, when people are calling movie trash, it does have a different meaning. And
right.
he probably stuck with that
yeah.
through the rest of his career. But yeah, I mean, I have no problem calling something trash and saying I love it immediately after. Like it's
yeah. I mean, if I'm saying it to somebody's face, I'm going to say like trash with a smile on my face. Like, yeah.
Well, I mean, not to sound like a complete dick, but when you think of Ted V. Michaels, you think of trash. You think of trash horror. You think of, I mean, now I do after cramming all these movies for the last couple of weeks. I feel like I've been like over the last 2 week span walking into recording this episode, I feel like I've been cramming for a test for like a subject that doesn't make any sense. Like, you know, I have all these anecdotes and like, you know, these maybe Ted Michaels facts and stuff that I'd love to share, but there's just so many of them. It's yeah. just, I don't know. But yeah, Michaels passed away at the age of 87, October of 2016. And he spent spent 65 years of his life making movies. Movies were his life. John Waters did say like no two Michaels films are the same, mm-hmm. which I think for the first half of his career is true. But at the end, it's kind of, but yeah, he started doing stunt work in the mid 50s in films. At the age of 15 is when he started doing like, he was really into like show business, or he had a 2 hour long, like magic show that he would film. And he was a ventriloquist, mm-hmm. which there is a scene, and he's older in his documentary where he's talking, and it's terrible. He's basically just moving his mouth the whole time, but muffling his voice when he's he's no what's his name?
Harlan Pepper.
Yeah, he's no Christopher Guest in Best in Show. But yeah, I don't know if we've named the doc. It's called The Wild World of Ted V. Michaels. It's a short documentary, about 68 minutes or so. It's pretty weak in that it probably spends like collectively 40 minutes of just scenes from his movies.
Yeah.
But the talking head parts are pretty fun. You get some pretty good stories. Lila Zaborin's in it. Michaels talks a lot. I mean, it's interesting. It's more interesting than his audio commentary. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, we're going to dive into the movie and more about Ted V. Michaels.
Yeah. We'll do that right after this promo from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
Okay, so my favorite part, I mean, I'm still going to focus on Ted V. Michaels here.
Yeah.
You know, I've already said the auto commentary, I think, is terrible. But when he talks about his films, whether it's the plot, the cast, the location, his castle, he always has this excited smile on his face. So his interviews are very fun to watch. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's devoted his whole life and career to making movies, no matter the circumstances, no matter the financial constraints, because he basically said that he sold everything that he owned to make movies. Like, he sold all his equity to that day when he was talking in the 2008 documentary. He doesn't even own a house, like, or a property. Everything is kind of, he owes tons of money. He's a true independent filmmaker through and through. And I kept thinking, like, when I watched Mark of the Astro Zombies, at first I felt kind of sad to where his career ended up, like what the movies he was making. But then I thought, you know what? No, like, this is exactly what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
They are entertaining. I mean, more people will hate him than like him, but the people that like him and this trash horror will love his stuff. And that's kind of how I started seeing all of his films. Like, the stuff I didn't like, I found like I didn't want to really rate, because you can't really rate it. Kind of like Alvaro Pissarri. To me personally, like, it's just, it's too difficult to rate. I don't know. I found all this stuff kind of uplifting, no matter how terrible by, you know, one specific tastes they might be. Yeah, that's how I feel about Ted V. Michaels. But let's start talking about Blood Orgy. Yeah, I mean, the plot is all over the place. I didn't bring up the weird gangster plot of, I mean, it's even worth talking about. Like,
there's no plot. It's a series of events that are happening. It's exactly what, you know, you said that he had been taking notes about all these elements of witchcraft over 2 years. So the movie feels like he took each note and then turned that into a scene, but didn't care that there was a consistent thread really going through it. I, you know, there is no literal, you know, like, sex orgy. There's not really a blood orgy. I know you're going to argue that there is at the end. I strongly disagree, but it isn't like an orgy in the sense that it is just overload, like, sensory overload of, like, events and things like that. And I'll say, like, you know, I watched this once and I was like, okay, this isn't a movie that you watch, obviously, for a story, because there really isn't one. This is more of an experience film. So, as we usually do, watch it at least twice before recording. My second watch, I popped a few edibles. Way better experience watching this film.
Yes, that's the way to do it. Because I found, like, I would start watching Ted V. Michaels movies early in the morning. And it worked because I think a few reasons. First off, I was kind of still a little incoherent and sleepy. So mm-hmm. I was kind of like in maybe in this dreamlike haze, you know, I'd be drinking my coffee, waking up, but I don't know. And if it's the first thing you see in the day, I want to be positive. So I'm looking and finding the positivity in these things.
You find positivity in everything. Now.
I do. I mean, you got to live life like that, right?
That sounds exhausting.
It does get exhausting. I'm not going to lie. But yeah, I mean, I do think, like you said, the plot is all over the place for Blood Orgy. I think there is a continuous theme, which is almost like men are motivated by fear and powerful women.
Yeah.
Like, I pull, like, because almost all these scenes, there's a lot of scenes where the women that are in Mara's house, she, you know, evokes like these visions for them to see, looking into a mirror, and they see their past lives. And in every case, like I said in the summary, their past life, they were persecuted as a witch because the men, I guess, were threatened by something they were doing that they didn't understand. Mm-hmm. And that kind of carries out through the whole movie, too. I mean, the way the ending, I think, even kind of, it's these four men who just kind of show up and they're kind of motivated by fear of what Mara and these witches could do. I don't know. I'm just kind of grabbing, you know, reaching at this point. You're right. There isn't real no plot.
Thank you. Jeez. Took you like 5 minutes of rambling to be like, yeah, you're right, Erica. Like, yeah, I know.
There is. I mean, it's yeah, it's 70.
Okay. There's a difference between having a plot and just things happen. And that's what this movie is. It's like a, it's like all of his little notes in his pad from all the stuff that he read about witchcraft. And he's like, oh, I read this thing in this one book. I'm going to make a scene about that. Like, yeah, there's a very loose thread here connecting all of it. But it's basically repeating. It's like, oh, another woman came. Here's a flashback. And you were a witch who died this way. Oh, here's a flashback. And you died this way. Like,
it's true.
It's endearing in that way. Because of like its repetitiveness, its lack of a plot, this movie would be infuriating for most people to watch.
Yeah, as would most of his movies. I mean, no doubt.
All of them, yeah.
I mean, one thing like I did mention before, I do think the appeal for me personally is the cast that he selects. And he, in most of his movies, and I have to give it to him, he assembles female casts in every movie. There's usually a female lead, mm-hmm. which I love. And in this movie, it's Mara, played by Lila Zavorin, and she is like so impressive. As soon as she starts off in her first seance, where she's kind of just shrieking and yelling and in pain because I guess this deceased soul isn't inhabiting her body. It's her performance throughout the entire plotless 73 minutes is just so captivating. And one thing that I just was completely into. And like I mentioned, too, in 10 Violent Women, there was that actress who plays the leader of the gang, Sheila. Her name is Sally Alice Gamble. She's like setting all the plans for these this gang. And she has this take no shit attitude. The warden, she reminded me a little of Susan Tyrell. He finds these actresses that have no previous history, you know, acting history or even after these movies. And I just think they kind of steal the show. Tora, you know, in all the Astro Zombies movies. and I know you didn't like this movie very much, but I kind of talked it up a little, probably, well, obviously too much, but Strike Me Deadly, his first movie.
I guess I just like, it's just structured really weird.
It like, is. It's all a flashback scene of how it's like a love story.
Yeah. It's mostly a love story. I like the idea of it where like just some random guy in a forest happens to see a guy get killed, and if you just would have had this like mad pursuit going on and there's also this forest fire that's being contended with, like sure, but the middle part I was like, fuck off.
Yeah, it's a flashback scene to how this kidnapped couple met and came to the forest and working there.
Yeah, you talked that one up and you did not mention anything about that middle part. I'm a little mad about that, actually.
I loved it because the actress and the actor, I mean, they felt so real, like their banter and the way they just presented their emotions and actions. I don't know. Again, I love the cast he assembles in most of these. Like I haven't watched a lot of the 2000 movies and the 1990s, mm-hmm. which seem like he pulls a bunch of and especially in Mark of the Astro Zombies. I don't know if that was a crowdfunded movie or something, but the amount of people being killed just like in the street, and it's just, I feel like that might've been like a pledge reward level. Like,
I would do that.
Oh, I would too.
Yeah. 100%. I would be like, hey, I'll get killed. And I mean, just don't show my face. Like,
well, yeah. and yeah, so there's a lot of killing in all his movies, and even in Blood Orgy, there's a lot of death scenes in here. There's like at least a dozen, not counting the blood orgy at the end where all the she-devils start killing themselves. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's talk about some of the deaths. Again, this is me talking, everybody. You know, you're sick of me or you like it, but...
I mean, I'm still putting up with you.
So. Yeah, for now. I will never pick a Ted B. Michaels movie. I don't want to end our relationship or you to end it. I think they're so absurd when people are killed in this movie. It's so absurd and, you know, people yell their heads off. It's strangely realistic. From all the people I've seen that I've killed, they react this way.
Yeah.
I haven't killed anybody, but
Lance has.
So a lot, I mean, that's why I'm so positive in life. It's because I let out my my anger in ways that help the world. But a lot of these women, like we said, are killed in a past life. There's a woman being strangled by a lover, which is the weirdest scene that has like this clock going off and like a cuckoo, which doesn't make sense because everything seems to be like this centuries old time period. But that specific murder is really odd.
Yeah.
But when she's killed, he just strangles her to death. Die. Just die. And she's gagging. I'm like, okay, I'm into this. That's kind of the first one. And then we have Sherry Vernon, who was the makeup artist in this movie. She's the one that's tortured. Ted V. Michaels is the guy that's jabbing needles into her back. And then she's burned at the stake while her son watches.
Yeah, he gets beaten.
He gets whipped. I was hoping there would be a turn.
Well, then I would have to write about it. So
there's a woman that's stoned to death, which is pretty brutal because she has the whole setup for that is they, you know, these men gather around. They think she's a witch. They try and perform this exorcism that fails. Mm-hmm. And her yelling, she genuinely looks terrified. And they drag her and all the villagers come and just pummel her with these rocks.
Yeah.
Disturbing. My favorite scene, though, is when Mara is executed by these gangsters that, I don't know, they want to kill her because she used some sort of magic spell to kill some ambassador to the United Nations.
And Rhodesia.
Rhodesia, yes. by drown. I mean, hers is kind of cool, too. She has a photo of him and drown and puts it in like a fishbowl filled with water.
Yeah.
And he's at a party and drowns on water, which isn't there. The gangsters want to kill her, I guess, to, you know, destroy any evidence of the murder. And there's the shooter. They send a shooter and he goes into the castle and shoots Mara 3 times, shoots a woman that's there, you know, like looking into the mirror, and then kills Taruk, her little servant. And that whole scene is kind of brutal because it's just a matter of minutes. And this guy just walks in and just starts shooting. Like it felt like a mass shooting scene. It was really disturbing to watch.
Yeah, her getting shot, he just like opened the door and just like shoots her 3 times. I was like, oh, she's dead now? But no.
She turns into a cat.
Yeah.
And she raises Taruk from the dead and she's back. I mean, and then later she turns into another animal, which she loves.
Yeah. Well, she gets revenge. She gets like some voodoo dolls out and then she gets revenge against the two gangsters who killed her. And there's one guy. I wrote like ants in his pants. Like that was my note.
Oh, that's I heard that a lot. Lance has ants in his pants.
Did you? Yeah,
it's a good run. Oh. And he does the boogie dance all the way to France.
You know what? Like I used to get so on the dollar bill, how it says United States of America on there.
Yeah.
People who would pick on me would fold the, fold it over to like spell out something different at the top. So it would be tits of America.
Oh, nice.
When I was a kid, and I was like, I don't even fucking have any tits. Like, what am I doing?
I have no cash. I mean, I'd never have cash, but I need to try that.
Stop it. Bringing back my trauma. So,
hey, Lance, you brought up ants in the pants.
Then. Look, I didn't know that about you. So, like, clearly he was sitting there, like, scratching like he had ants in his pants.
And that was a problem as a kid. I always had ants in my pants.
Well, that's your fault for, you know,
pooping ants.
I was going to say for being so sweet, but all right.
Yeah. And then the guy who has, you know, ants in his pants, jumps out of the window, which is fun to watch.
Yeah.
Always. I wish there was a dummy fall. There isn't.
I mean, like that way, the way that one happens is she puts a voodoo doll in a jar that has ants in it.
And like a snake and lizards. Yeah. I mean,
I got to tell you, if someone put like my voodoo doll in a jar with a moth.
Oh, yeah.
Good fucking God.
Oh, yeah. That's sad. That's scary. Yeah. I'm sorry that you hate moths so much.
It's their fault for existing.
And then there's another, like where she has this effigy and sticks pins in the arms and legs and the face of this voodoo doll. And the guy starts bleeding from the eyes. And Yeah. The way she murders, you know, through her magic powers, those are fun to watch too.
Yeah.
And this is only a 73-minute movie. The kills are kind of, again, there's no plot. I'm going to admit to that. I mean, but the kills are, you know, they're set up nicely. I mean, you have a lot of kills here and there. Mm-hmm. I do wish with the title, there was more blood. There is blood, but it's very.
But I don't blame him for trying to sell his movie. You know, when you introduce it, you're like, Blood Orgy of the She Devils. I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm on board. Then you're like, Ted B. Michaels. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. I mean, the title was, obviously I'm looking for movies with blood. So sure. When I saw this title, I was like, fuck yes, I'm going to watch this. I liked it mainly because of the actress. But, and there are quite a few movies that have Blood Orgy in the title.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, probably the most popular is Herschel Gordon Lewis's The Gore Girls, which is also known as just Blood Orgy, mm-hmm. Which is, I love that movie.
Yeah.
It's kind of his go at a giallo, which is great stuff. Andy Milligan's The Ghastly Ones, 1968. That one's also known as Blood Orgy. And then there's just a bunch of movies with Blood Orgy actually in the title. Blood Orgy of the Leather Girls, Blood Orgy at Beaver Lake, Blood Orgy of the Damned, Blood Orgy of the Spider Queen. There's a lot out there, but
yeah,
you know, Ted V. Michaels was the first to use Blood Orgy in the title of his movie. So respect for that. Should we talk about the ending?
Sure.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
I mean, my only other thing is you kind of already mentioned it, like when she comes back to life, she turns into, besides a cat, she also turns into a bat, and there's a great fake bat in this. And so
there is a great fake
bat. I didn't give a star rating on this. I gave it a heart because I was like, I got nothing for If I was going to give it a star rating, fake bats always bump it up an extra half star, just like a child kill.
What do you think it would be if you had to rate it? Like if I had a gun to your head right now and I was like, you have to rate this or you will die. I'd probably give it like a 3, maybe a 3.5.
Good Lord. On edibles, this would get a 2.5.
Okay. That's good. 2.5.
I would need an asterisk for that, on edibles score.
Also, and say half star specifically for the fake bat.
Exactly. The half star for fake bat, total score based on being on drugs.
Right. So, yeah. So the fake bat scene, it's at the very end. The ending, again, like you said, there's the beginning and the end. It's kind of bookmarked by this plotless, just scenes of whatever. Mm-hmm. But the ending, it has some fun scenes. I think it's weak. So Mark, the lead character, I respect that at the end, he's the main man in the whole movie, pretty much. And he sacrificed at the end and killed, which I respect, by all the she-devils. And then these four men pop up. One of them's this Dr. Helsford. And they're all kind of these doctors, these priests, these religious doctors, these kind of naysayers of, I guess, the occult, or they're worried about, again, kind of motivated by fear of what's going on. And they all come to the house, and the castle is kind of glowing from the outside. And they all join together and have these cosmic powers and start shooting out electricity like they're Palpatine, mm-hmm. just shooting it at the house. And as they're doing that, the she-devils inside, they've already killed Mark, they start having what I'm assuming is considered the blood orgy of just killing each other, killing Taruk, killing Mara. And the men enter the house. They walk in. It looks like some sort of cult death scene, like all the dead bodies everywhere, which was kind of cool to see. But Mara turns and they're like, I can't find the woman, responsible, the queen. And they hear this just up in the rafters, and there's a fake bat going crazy, and it's Mara. It's good.
It's adorable.
They capture the bat, throw her into a fire, and her soul, I guess, kind of, she comes back as this spectral, this blue light.
Yeah.
Implying that she may be back. I was hoping for something a little more over the top, like maybe some crazy big demon puppet would pop out or something and just start wreaking havoc on everybody. Something big,
You're not going to get that in Ted V. Michaels' movie. He doesn't have big anything in any of his movies.
That's true. I'm trying to think of something big.
Nothing.
His mustache.
There you go.
That's the biggest thing I could think of. That makes the most sense. Blood Orgy of the She-Devils. I feel like My last couple of picks, I've lost some people that might be on my side with these picks.
I don't think so.
I'm specifically talking to Robert. I've seen some, you know, Robert, I apologize for Night Game, for Blood Orgy. I need to make this next pick something that will be my legacy. I need to find something like Primal Rage or...
I don't know. If you
can, Corruption. I know.
I think you can top that.
I don't know, but... We've talked about it. Would you recommend this to people?
On drugs.
On edibles.
Yeah.
Or any drug.
I mean, stay safe, people. Like, no needles. No snorting, no needles. Just, you know, keep it safe. But, I mean, it's one of those movies that I feel like you can, if you're not inclined to do drugs, then, you know, maybe just you can put it on the background while you clean the house. And every once in a while you look over and there's something interesting happening.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, the scenes are captivating, I think. I mean, visually, it looks great. It's pretty dark, and it's definitely independent DIY. He used 35 millimeter in all his films before he went digital, like in the 90s. But yeah, I can totally see why people don't enjoy this and wouldn't enjoy it. It's a lot of mumbo jumbo. I'm fascinated by what we've already talked about, like Michael's saying, claiming he spent so much time and research on this. So you know, you could just put it in the background and watch the visuals, but listening to that mumbo jumbo jargon and like how he's pulling from like Native American and I just, it's too much, but it becomes like, okay, well, you know, this is definitely a product of its time and yeah. He's going for it. Watch it early in the morning, watch it on drugs, watch it when your brain is rested and...
It's good for naps too. Like, and it's one of those movies where also like, if you don't want to... Sorry, if you don't want to do housework or you don't need to,
that's true.
Then like, yeah, you can be laying on your couch like, I need to take a nap. What should I put on? Blood Orgy, The She-Devils. Because then you can just sort of like drift in and out of sleep and kind of watch some
and stuff. It's not going to, you know, you're not going to spend your whole day nap and it's only a 73 minute long.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. That's a good, I will take that.
All right.
That's a good pick. I'm letting people get their healthy amount of sleep. There you go. I did want to point out there is an authorized biography out there called The Life and Cinema of Ted V. Michaels by Kevin Scott Collier. I'm interested to check it out. I mean, I've had my fill of Michael's films for a while.
Yeah.
But I am fascinated by his story, by listening to him answer questions, you know, when brought up. So I might pick that up at some point.
I do want to say, like, yes, I did. I'm not as big a fan of this movie as you are, but I am glad that you picked this and that we talked about Ted V. Michaels, because... You know, when it comes to low budget filmmakers like him, they don't get a lot of attention. Everyone else is covering Carpenter, Romero, like all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I feel, you know, this is kind of in the spirit of what we like to do here. So I appreciate you picking it. Please pick better next time, though, for fuck's sake.
I mean, to add on to that, yeah, most of his movies have only 100 views on Letterboxd. I think Corpse Grinders and maybe Astro Zombies have over 1,000. But yeah, I mean, he is somebody who a lot of people won't like, but he's a part of history for sure. And, you know, I'm going to throw it out there, creating trash horror. So,
yep.
But yeah, when you watch Blood Orgy of the She-Devils, what are you going to put on after? Because you probably need to watch something after immediately. Like, that's what both our double feature picks would have to be.
I'm here to punish.
Oh.
So, yeah, I think
we're going opposite directions.
Yeah, I'm doing a test of endurance double feature.
Okay.
And no, you know what? Take it back. Test of endurance.
Oh, I like feature. That term. Eh? That's good.
Double feature of low budget, plodding yet charming films from directors who films would be pretty impossible to have a marathon of or even to go through. I need to dive into this director's films and I'm going to watch, you know, I'm going to spend the next few weeks watching their films. Impossible with yeah. either of these directors. Both this, my pick, and Blood Orgy are under 80 minutes. So I think this could be doable if you have the strength within you.
Or you want to take a 2-hour, 3-hour nap.
Yes. If you want to, stole it, you're off. If you want to take a 2-3-hour nap, my double feature pick is Andy Milligan's Blood.
Ooh,
from
yes.
1973.
That might even be, I don't know, a tougher sit through.
Oh.
Than Blood Orgy?
I don't think so.
I think it's way more DIY. Like
it is for sure, but Andy Milligan's movies are so goddamn charming to me. Like I can't help
it. I agree.
Like, but again, they need to be spaced out. Like no one, God, who are you people if you've ever done an Andy Milligan marathon?
Well, you're throwing out a Blood Orgy of the She-Devils and now Andy.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, this is a test of endurance, folks. Like if you can do this, I fucking applaud you.
I love it. I love this pick.
But for folks who don't know, Andy Milligan's Blood is about Dr. Orlovsky, his wife, and his servants. They move into this house to conduct experiments while Orlovsky is tending to some family business. Like all of Milligan's films, it's basically watching a group of community theater actors deliver dialogue that bounces between statements of mundane tasks about going upstairs to do something and doing coming back downstairs to do something else to just outright yelling at each other. Milligan doesn't know how to shoot at night, so everything takes place during the day with a lantern if it's at night. I love Andy Milligan for that, but it's an endurance or an endurance test, if you will. So you can watch Blood. It's on Tubi, or you can pick up, I think Severin still has their Milligan box set. Not the deluxe version, but you can probably still get the, if you want to really dive into Milligan.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good pick, Erica. So
what about you?
I kept thinking of two movies, especially the first time I watched it. I watched Blood Orgy of the She-Devils. And a couple of times these movies kept popping out throughout my first viewing. One was George A. Romero's Hungry Wives or Season of the Witch.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking that one, too.
And then the other one, which is I'm going with as my pick, is the British horror Night of the Eagle from 1962. It's also known as Burn, Witch, Burn.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
which was the title for the U.S. release, directed by Sidney Hayers. I first watched this years ago at a Terror Tuesday 35mm screening, and I loved it. It's this beautifully shot, like black and white, that sticks with you. And I feel like, I mean, you didn't, but if you watch Blood Orgy of She-Devils, I feel like you have to kind of class it up somehow. And this movie is super well-executed British horror. It's just, it's beautiful. And I kept thinking about it when I was watching Blood Orgy, mainly due to the terrible men who, along with not believing, you know, in the witchcraft and spells, they quickly discount any women who do or show made up symptoms of being a witch. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what the focus is on this. There's a really strong female performance in this. Janet Blair plays Tansy Taylor, she's an extremely intelligent woman who's married to this psychology professor who's just horrible in this. And years prior in the movie, she started dabbling in witchcraft when her husband was dying and the doctors kind of had given up on him and she wanted to change the course of his fate. So she started dabbling in this black magic and he survived and she attributed it to that. And when her husband finds out, you know, he basically calls her stupid. He doesn't believe any of it. Burning a bunch of the stuff, which triggers burning a bunch of the stuff that she uses for these, you know, spells that she's been secretly doing for 2 years, mm-hmm. which triggers all of these kind of supernatural events. It is very talky, but you kind of need that because it does have a nice plot. So watch Blood Orgy, put this on, and then you'll watch a real movie. Or you can watch this. And then if you're ready for bed, put Blood Orgy on and start your bed a little early. But, yeah, it's talky, and it does have some relationship drama like most of these horrors from the 60s do, but I think it's great pacing, has some really cool foreshadowing clues throughout, but still has an unexpected ending. Yeah, so Night of the Eagle, Burn, Witch, Burn, also known as Burn, Witch, Burn. It's streaming online. I think it's on YouTube or maybe Dailymotion or some free site. Mm-hmm. There is a Kino Blu-ray release out there under the Burn, Witch, Burn title. That's what I would watch. And yeah, that's it for April Showers of Blood.
Well, for us, technically, but we do have a sort of offshoot of April Showers of Blood. Lance and I were invited onto the VHS podcast with Dirk.
Yeah.
And we talked about Blood Moon.
1990, directed by Alec Mills. It's an Australian horror. But yeah, it was fun talking to Dirk. His new releases, old returns format, where we spend time talking about new to us stuff, what we're reading, what we're watching. So it's really fun talking to Dirk about that.
Yeah. The movie, not so much.
Yeah. Blood Moon. Yeah. Listen to the episode.
Yeah.
Let us know, or you'll hear what we think about the movie.
Yeah. We won't spoil it. I just did, sort of. But context is in the episode. Check it out. That's VHS, VH space US. You can check that out. That should be out this week, actually. All right. So next movie, we are moving out of April Showers of Blood. I'm very excited for this one. I threatened to pick, well, I didn't threaten. I said I was going to pick this one when we were recording our end of year episode with Anthony and Lindsay. This was one of my favorite new to me movies of last year. So we're going to be covering the Latvian movie Spider from 1992, directed by Vasilijs Mass. It's basically the story about the sexual awakening of a young girl who agrees to sit as a model of the Virgin Mary for a painter. And soon she starts having nightmares about a giant spider. This is kind of like Blood Orgy. This is much more of an experience watch, but the cinematography is fucking god tier in this. Like it is gorgeously shot. There is some stuff in here who might make some people who are squeamish uncomfortable. Obviously, I get squeamish. I get uncomfortable with nothing
except moths.
Yeah, that. God, I just watched I've been putting this off for years because somebody warned me about the moths in it. But I saw Peter Strickland's got a new movie coming out that I really want to see called Flex Gourmet. And so I was like, okay, I'm finally going to, I need to watch The Duke of Burgundy because I've heard nothing but good things about this. Fucking hell, man. There are so many moths in that movie. It was hard. And there's a point where one of them is like on the woman's hand. And it's just like fluttering all over her. I nearly
threw Is this up. Like a palm-sized moth, like the big ass ones?
Or it's
is
it not just that big, but it's a bit like half, maybe half the size of her hand, but still just, oh God. And the thing is like, it's a 5-star movie, but I had to take a 0.5-star off because it's making me uncomfortable. It's not the movie's fault.
What if it was a fake moth?
No, it's a movie like that wouldn't have a fake moth. Anyway, I need to stop talking about moths because it's too much. All right, where are we at? Spider, speaking of other
insects.
Creepy crawlies. So so this has a Mondo Macabro Blu-ray release. Apologies to listeners. It's not streaming anywhere that I could find, at least not through legal means. But I definitely recommend picking it up.
Yeah, I do too recommend picking it up. And I guess that's one thing that even my picks may be pretty terrible. They're usually streaming somewhere, people. So give me the benefit of
that's
the doubt.
That's true. Yeah, Lance makes it easier for you guys to watch it than I do. But I mean, I'm not.
I did pick up. I picked up Spider, though.
Okay.
And Bloody Sec. I mean, there's so many. All your picks are good. So
I know. I mean, I'm not pulling movies that aren't available in any way, shape, or form. Like, I'm not like, hey, I did that with
Black Panther. How about Blood Moon? That was the Dirk
pick. That was Dirk's pick.
I know. I'm just saying that was a tough situation.
No, I did pick Black Pit of Dr. M, but I mean, the DVD was out of print, so I felt bad about that. But Spanish speakers could have watched it because it was on YouTube. So
that's true.
So yeah, pick up the Mondo Macabro Blu-ray. You can buy it directly from them on their Big Cartel shop. Diabolic DVD might still have some in stock as well. If you love movies like Zulowski's Possession, anything along those lines, Valerie and Her Week of Wonders, this is probably a movie for you. So that's for next time. And we're going to have a guest. It's been a while. Ian from Rock Shock Pop is coming back to join us for this one.
Yes, I love Ian. If you guys don't follow Rock Shock Pop, it's really worth following because he does great reviews on Blu-ray releases. Mm-hmm. He talks about a lot of comic books that I love and grew up with. He's a big Swamp Thing fan. Yep. I mean, he's a great guy. We had him on for Black Magic 2, yeah, during Shaugust.
He did the commentary track for Black Magic 2 for 88 Films. He was our guest for that episode in Shaugust last year. So I actually, when I was picking this, I was like, I wonder if Ian has a review of this. And lo and behold, he did. So that's why I messaged him and he's going to be our guest for next time. Excited to have him back. And then on another note, before we close out here, since we're talking about low budget horror in this episode, I did want to mention that there is an Indiegogo currently going on right now for a documentary about Dookie Flyswatter. For those of you who don't know that he's an actor in films like Sorority Babes and the Slime Bowl-A-Rama and Surf Nazis Must Die. You can find out more about that documentary on DookieDoc.com. That's DUKEYDOC.com. And you can also check out a recent episode from our friends over at Genre Exposure. They did an episode about Sorority Babes in the Slime Bowl-a-Rama and plugged the documentary. So check that out as well.
Nice.
If you're not already, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Unsung Horrors. And you can follow me on Letterboxd, Twitter, and Instagram at Hex Massacre.
And I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd under L. Shivey.
Thanks for listening, y'all. Night.
Bye.
It's Death by Video.
I'm Phil.
I'm Kit.
And I'm Graham, saying welcome to our podcast full of merry movie mayhem.
Ever wonder what an Irish kung fu movie would look like?
It's called Fatal Deviation, and we covered it.
Ever wonder what a movie about a thousand cats would look like?
It's called Night of a Thousand Cats, and we covered it.
And it stars Hugo Stiglitz. Listen to Death by Video to hear us discuss and dissect some of the weirdest, wildest, and wackiest films ever made. All this and more on Death by Video!
Woo!